So the topic tonight is Yaakov and Esav. Believe it or not. Now, what do I think the topic? What should we talk about? I would like to be able to understand why we needed Yaakov and Esav. Why did Yitzchak have to have two sons? Why couldn't Yitzchak just have one son? Everybody knows that even 200 years ago, I mean, I did not go to school 200 years ago, but when I went to school, all the years of my education, there wasn't a pair of twins in my class. Because the success rate of births with twins was not that great. And everybody knows that their great-grandmother had twins someplace along the way, one of them died. That's how it always was. It's not like today, where eggs are born and they live. You know, the babies, the embryos, they don't die. They just put them in a cooker, and a couple of months later, they're regular people. But this was not the case. This was not the case hundreds of years ago, and it was certainly not the case in the time of Avram Avinu. So the birth of twins, the Yitzchak, is itself a miracle. I mean, they came out with a personality, with an ideology, with a way of doing things. I mean, remarkable. It's remarkable. And because they were twins, they could not be sent, neither could be sent away. It wasn't a repeat of Yishmael and Yitzchak. Yishmael was the son of Abraham, but he could be sent away because his mother's name was Hagar. And even though, according to Chazal, Hagar had many children with Abraham, right? Keturah. She's called Keturah in the Chumash. She had many children, but none of those children were really in. They were all out. They were all out. So Avraham Avinu gave them presents and sent them away. It was this option of sending away did not exist with Esav. Did not exist. He couldn't send them away. In fact, I think that's a reasonable explanation for Yitzchak's seeming inability to understand what was going on. Right? If you want to say that Yitzchak, that he was blind, that he didn't know what was going on, it's okay. I guess you could do that. But my feeling is that Yitzchak knew very well what was going on. And he knew that his only option was to kind of get Esav somehow involved in what he was involved with. Now, Esav was a man of the world, meaning he was Gashmi in the language of Hasidut. He was very into, having a good time, you could say. Into being part of the earthiness of the world. And Yitzchak said to him, bring me food. Bring me something to eat. So he was able to convert Esav's interest in hunting, and cooking, and eating with the mitzvah of kibud av va'em. So I see it as Yitzchak's attempt to kind of keep Esav in. And eventually, Esav, of course, goes off on his own, as children are wont to do, but he was remained connected somehow. He remained connected even though he hated his brother Yaakov, which is something that brothers are often want to do. But still he was connected. He went to his father's Hesvedim, his burial, etc. I mean, you all know the story. So the question of what we need Esav for is a real question. Now, the answer to that question is also clear. It's also clear because in the creation of Am Yisrael, you had to get to the point where Yaakov's children, Yaakov, not Yitzchak, right? Yaakov's children were all in. Despite what they did. They could have done the worst possible things and have defamed the family and the father, Yaakov, but they were in. There was never a suggestion that Shimon and Levi, who acted against the best interests of the family and against the direct statement of their father, that Shimon and Levi would be excluded from Am Yisrael. There was never such a suggestion. It was never so that Yitzchak was the Ma'avar. In other words, what did Avraham create? Avraham said, if you're like me, you're in. But you can't build anything on that. I mean, the nation of Israel could have never existed on that precedent. You have to be like me. You have to be like Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was a great thinker, a great person, a spiritual advisor. I mean, he was special. So you could, one generation, it could work. So Yitzchak was also special. Yitzchak was able to say, I will go with my father. He was the only one who said that. Right? Vayelchu shnehem yachdav. They went together. What do you mean they went together? Whatever Avraham Avinu taught, Yitzchak absorbed. Whatever it was that Yaakov, Avraham Avinu suggested as the basic ideology, Yitzchak accepted it. So much so that when Avraham Avinu said that God wants me to sacrifice you, my son, that was not a problem. That was not a problem for Yitzchak. Just as it wasn't a problem for Avraham. You know, it was contrary to what others say. There is no mention in the Chumash of a trial of something that was unclear. Something was unclear to Avraham. Avraham knew what could be clearer than a direct command from God. What is there in the world that you could not find a rationale for arguing about or for disagreeing about other than a direct command from God? And that was Avraham Avinu, and that was Yitzchak. Vayelchu shnehem yachdav. It says it three times in the parasha. Right? It says three times in the parasha. Who's left behind? Shnei ha-na'arim. Who are Shnei ha-na'arim? Left behind? The Chazal say, Eliezer and Yishmael. Yishmael. Of course he's left behind. I mean, Eliezer did not grow up in the house of Abraham. But Yishmael did. But Yishmael couldn't get it. He wouldn't be able to fathom what was going on. You know, that Avraham Avinu is willing to sacrifice his only son, who's going to be the continuer of the line of Avraham Avinu. He couldn't do that. Yaakov Avinu, the third of the Avot, everybody's in. There's never a suggestion that if you do something wrong, Tamar and Yehuda, Shimon the Levi, Reuven, is never a suggestion that anybody might lose his place. And that's an idea that we've carried on, that the Jewish people have carried on from, what do they say, once a Jew, always a Jew? It's not always, not such a good thing, you know, the wrong people said that also. But I mean, what I mean is that being Jewish is no longer a t'nai, there's no longer a condition about what you think, or what you say, and what you act, that's why I find it personally annoying when religious people say that other people who observe Judaism in a somewhat different way are not included. Who said they're not included? I mean, how do you come to such a conclusion? It's beyond me. Of course, if somebody gives you a sandwich with treif meat in it, you shouldn't eat it. But that's not because they're excluded. They're doing the wrong thing. I mean, everybody does the wrong thing sometime or other. But they're still in. They're part of the deal. That's what we learned from the Avot. Refer the Avot that this passage from Avraham Avinu who could hardly be emulated, who was a hero of you know who were of the Rambam. The Rambam thought that Avraham Avinu was his hero, which might mean, you know, if we were psychologists, that he was the person. He had two heroes. He had Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu was, it was bestowed upon him. That he was, whereas Avraham Avinu made himself into it. So I think that the Rambam may have appreciated Avraham Avinu even more than Moshe Rabbeinu, even though Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who could have brought the Torah into the world, which is the Rambam's position. So you have, besides the big thing that happens in this parasha, is that at the end, even though they Esav hates Yaakov, but they don't destroy each other. And in the next week's parasha, Yaakov gets the upper hand. Yaakov gets the upper hand, which leads me to, it's led me to a question that I had, that thought that I had, which, people are talking to a certain extent about the halacha of rodef. You know, if somebody comes to kill you, you can kill them. Even though there's no due process, and there's no witnesses, and there's no one else making you, you're the witnesses and the court and the executioner. You do the whole thing. That's called the din of rodef. And of course, we're beset by people who come at us with knives, and the Memshalah, I think wisely decided that you can't wait to get stabbed before you kill them or stop them somehow. You have to stop them before they stab you. That seems like a reasonable thing, but we know that in the Torah, in the Tanakh, there are examples. In the Torah, Tanakh, there are examples of a case of rodef where the person who was beset upon did not fight back. He could have fought back, but he did not. And the most famous example, of course, is David HaMelech. David HaMelech, when Shaul, the first king of Israel, had decided to destroy David before he became king. And they found themselves together in a cave, and David, who was not yet HaMelech, but David decided not to kill Shaul HaMelech, even though he could have. And the Gemara asked that question, said, why didn't he kill him? Because he was sworn to destroy David HaMelech. But it's also true. I mean, that's a question. It's yours. There's no accepted answer. I mean, you can say whatever you say, but it's not something that's written in the Tanakh, which is very explicit in the book of Shmuel, very explicit about this story. But you know that Yaakov Avinu, at the end of the parasha of Toldot, ran away from Esav. And he ran to Padan Aram, where he then married, had children, worked. Very interesting story. That's all next week. The story is very, something you could really sink your teeth into. And then when he comes back, even though Esav meets him with a small army, Yaakov stands up to him. He doesn't kill him, but he stands up to him, and he has this battle with Sarosh of Esav, with this, you know, angel-like figure that is fighting, and he vanquishes him. So why didn't he do that before he ran away? Why did he run away? I mean, it could be that he ran away because he had to get married. All the shidduchim of this family came, you know, from Padan Aram, from Ur Kasdim, where Rivka's family was, where Avram's family was, you know, they all went. So that could have been the reason, but in fact, it sounds like when you read the Chumash that Yaakov was very much afraid and that Yitzchak and Rivka are very much afraid of what's going to happen to Yaakov. Whereas when he came back and he met up with this army of Esav and also Soros shel Esav, this angelic kind of figure who was the representative of Esav, he beat him handily, or maybe not handily, but he beat him. And there's no doubt about it. And as a result, Esav kind of stole away with his. So why couldn't that happen? Why couldn't that happen earlier? So this idea in Rodef that somebody chases after you to kill it says I'm going to kill you. It's not an easy halacha. It's not always obvious that someone who says he's going to do something is really able to do it. And the determination on my part that somebody's chasing me and says he's going to kill me, so it doesn't mean I can do anything about it. I mean, it's like you say, if someone chases, that's the halacha. If somebody chases after you, you can kill him. But maybe you can't. You know, like, it doesn't mean maybe you could kill him, okay, but maybe you can't kill him. Maybe you're not going to be able to protect yourself. Maybe you're not going to be, Israel is different. My 12-year-old grandson comes into the house. I said to him, what do you have? He sticks his head in this pot. I thought he was going to take out a gun. But no, he took out this pepper spray. What do they call it?
Nice.
Yeah, so I said, what are you going to do? He says, let me aim by you. I said, fine. I felt protected. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about Yaakov and Esav today. We're going to start by reading some psukim and the Rashi on those psukim. So it says, Ve'eile toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham olid et Yitzchak. So this is like we're used to it, but it's a strange construction. Because toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, when we know what we're talking about, why do we have to add Avraham olid et Yitzchak? And we know that Avraham olid et Yitzchak. So Rashi says, Eile toldot Yitzchak, Yaakov ve'Esav, Amurim ve'parasha, that the toldot, that the descendants of Yaakov, Yitzchak, are Yaakov and Esav. Great. Avraham olid et Yitzchak. Al yidei shekatav ha-katuv, Yitzchak ben Avraham, huskak lomar Avraham olid et Yitzchak lefi. Why is it that this construction of the pasuk is absolutely necessary? The comedians of the generation. I mean, they're the people who are annoying. The people who say things that you shouldn't say. We have a few people like that. They say, Hador Omrim, Me Avimelech Mitabra Sarah. Maybe Avimelech is the father of Sarah. Sharei Kama Shanim Shadash Im Avraham. After all, they lived together, Abraham and Sarah, for a long time, and she didn't have a child until she went down. They went to Avimelech. Vizeu shekatav. I'm sorry. Ba'asah Kodesh Baruch Hu Sar Klaster Panav Shel Yitzchak. Domel Avraham. He sort of made Yitzchak's face very similar to Avraham's, and he either called Avraham olid et Yitzchak, so that this statement Avraham olid et Yitzchak is a kind of a repetition of what people said. People who would, you know, when somebody cast aspersions, they said, "No, Avraham was the father of Yitzchak. Look at them; they look exactly the same." Bezeu shekatav kan Yitzchak ben Avraham hayah. So it's interesting, isn't it, that Rashi introduces us to this kind of safek. On the one hand, it was like all miracles. It was a miracle. On the other hand, there were people who tried to understand the miracle as being something natural. People don't like. So there are two kinds of people, right? The kind of people who say it's a miracle you crossed the street and didn't get killed. You know, that's a miracle. And the people who say that if this building would fly away in the middle of the night, it wouldn't be a miracle. There'd be some way of explaining it. There are always people in both camps. So on the one hand, this was a miracle. I mean, Abraham and Sarah were quite old. Such a thing hasn't happened in modernity, even in modernity. And on the other hand, you know, maybe it was somebody else. Maybe somebody else was the father. How that deals with the problem of Sarah being as old as she was, I'm not sure. But that's how Rashi introduces this story to us. Pasuk Kaf, Vayi Yitzchak ben Arba'im shana v'kachto et Rivka, bat b'tuela arami v'padan aram, achot lavad arami lo leisha. So there's this kind of, the Torah tells us who's who, and who are they related to, and that's very important. And then Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayetar Yitzchak Hashem lenochach ishto ki akarahi, Vayetar lo Hashem atar Rivka ishto. So, if you look at the Rashi, Vayetar, you see it's the fifth wide line in the beginning, in the middle of the line, Vayetar. Vayesh potrim padan aram kimo, I'm sorry, Vayetar, marbe vevtsir betfila. That's Vayetar, according to Rashi. To present your case to God. Bitfila. Layatar lo. Nit patsev, nit payes, vinit pate lo. And the omer. Ani kol lishon atar, lishon havtsara, beribui hu vechein. He quotes another pasuk. A lot of requests and a lot of. That's what it is. But now we're up to Nochach Ishto. That's the part that I wanted to read. You see that? Rashi, the Nochach Ishto. Ze omeid bizavit, zo umitpalev. One of them is standing in this corner and davening. Vizo omedet bizavit umitpalelet. So that Nochach Ishto, facing his wife, whenever you face somebody, it causes a reflection. Like what you do is often imitated. It's often imitated, but clearly, according to Rashi, the Pasuk said that who davened? Who was the instigated the davening? Yitzchak. Right? And who followed suit? That was Rivka. Vayetar lo. And then the rest of the Pasuk is that God paid attention to this. Lo v'lala. Lo v'lola. That's what Rashi says. Even though my feeling is always that women could daven better than men. Here Rashi says, lo is a significant word. Vayetar lo. It's not lo meaning him and her. It means him alone. Vayetar lo. It was his davening that did it. She'ein dome tfilat tzadik ben tzadik b'tfilat tzadik ben rasha lefikach lo v'lo la. This is what the Gemara says, that you can't compare the prayer of a tzadik ben tzadik with the prayer of a tzadik ben rasha. Who is the tzadik ben rasha? Rivka, she was a tzaddik ben rasha, and she certainly was an oved avodah zarah in her younger years before she came to be Yitzchak's wife. So she lived in the house of idolaters. So when you live in the house of idolaters, you know, you do what they do in the house. Not everybody's going to take a stand like Avraham Avinu. So a tzaddik ben tzaddik, his prayer is more acceptable than, that's what Rashi says, that a tzaddik ben rasha. You can understand why. You understand why? Because a tzaddik ben rasha has to do tshuva for a major transgression. There's always a major transgression involved in being a ben rasha. And doing tshuva for a basic, an important kind of transgression is, as Rav Nachman of Breslov says, never fully satisfied. Never fully satisfied, because you There are two reasons. There are two reasons. One is that the two reasons that tshuva is not enough, so to speak. One reason is that tshuva brings you closer to God. What does it mean that you ask? You ask for forgiveness, or you say, you confess that you did something wrong and that you know that it's wrong. So what does that mean? I mean, what does it mean to say you're confessing? It means that why did you confess? Why did you go through this process of tshuva? Why did you just say, well, forget about it? Let's forget about it. I guess because you feel impeded in your relationship. Even people who are not so involved in the relationship they have with God, from time to time, feel very strongly the relationship, if it's times of crisis or times of death. Most people who consider themselves to be religious, I don't like that word, but most people like that have a relationship with God. Not all the time, not like the Chofetz Chaim, but like from time to time. You know, something happens. You know, there's a war, there's peace, there's death, there's birth. From time to time, you sort of feel closer to God. So people like that, who have a connection, who feel that they have a connection, even if it's only from time to time, even if it's only, you know, part of the time, very much part of the time. Even if that is the case, that person doesn't want to have a debt on those occasions, you know. The bris, the pidyon haben, the wedding, he doesn't want to say, yeah, I really feel good, but you know, I shouldn't have done that. You know, you don't want to have that. So tshuva sort of takes care of that problem, but tshuva causes a problem. That's what Rav Nachman says. And that's a lot of people say, but Rav Nachman famously said it, that tshuva causes a problem. And the problem is that you get closer to God. You feel the closest of God right then, when you do tshuva. You feel closer to God. And then you realize that you didn't really take the transgression so seriously. Like, you thought you could just do something and it would disappear. But now you know that it was God who wanted you to do, or wanted you to prevent yourself from doing. And therefore, you didn't do enough tshuva. So you do tshuva again. Right? I think we mentioned this probably more than once. You do tshuva again. Because you didn't do enough tshuva the first time. Why didn't you do enough tshuva the first time? Because you didn't know what an aveira is. You thought it's like the Boy Scouts, right? You have a manual, do's, don'ts. And so you did what you shouldn't do. So you say, I'm sorry. But then, when you are allowed to feel closer to God, then the aveira gets bigger. And you say, maybe I didn't do enough. I didn't do enough tshuva, so I'm going to do tshuva again. So somebody who's a tzaddik ben tzaddik might, like Yitzchak, right? Chazal call him an olat mima. He was the perfect sacrifice. Your perfect sacrifice. Everything that Avram told him to do, he did. He accepted. He was with it. But a tzaddik ben Russia always has to do tshuva for the time that he was with the Russia. There's nothing that it can escape it. So the Chazal said the tefillah, or the tefillot of a tzaddik ben tzaddik, take precedence over the tefillot of a tzaddik ben Russia. That's what Rashi says. You see, Renochach Ishto, Zemek Zovi Zemek Palel, Zo, etc. Pasuk Kavet. What does the Pasuk say? Vayitrotzitzu abadim bekirbam batomer and came, lama ze anochi, vehalach ledrosh et Hashem. So you see that the miraculous nature said it to him, that she couldn't have a baby. Abraham and Sarah couldn't have a baby. Yitzchak and Rivka couldn't have a baby unless they interceded with God. I mean, having a baby is a more or less natural thing. It's not something which I mean, of course you daven for a good result, for the best result, you know, but it's not that having a baby is a miraculous event. It's true for Abraham and Sarah it was kind of miraculous because they were quite old. But it, in itself, it's not a miraculous event. So here we say, they didn't have a child until they asked for a miracle. They didn't have a child. In other words, the normal for them was not to have children. They davened for a miracle. So Pasuk HaBei says, Vayidro Tzitzu, they ran around in her womb, these two fellows. Al Kochecha, HaMikra HaZeh Omer Darshenu. Rashi says, there's no way to understand this Pasuk by translating the words straight away. But there's got to be a drasha. We've got to introduce a drasha. What's the drasha? What's the drasha? She satstam ma iritzitza zo. She satam. I'm sorry. The Torah does not clarify what it is that they're running around for. Vekatav im kein lama ze anochi. Right? She says, if this is what's going on, why am I here? Rabbatayna darshu lison ritza. The drasha is vayitrotzitzu is from running. Shaita uveret al pitchei Torah shel shem ve'ever. Yaakov rats umifarkes latzeit. When she passed by the yeshivas, so Yaakov tried to get out. He wanted to go to yeshiva. Uveret al pitchei avodah zarah. When she passed the idolatrous center, Ezer Mevarkes, let's say. So Ezer tried to get out. So according to this drasha of Chazal, which is brought to us by Rashi, that Yaakov and Ezer were always Yaakov and Ezer. They were in their mother's womb. They were Yaakov and Ezer. There was no hope for this whole thing. Nothing was going to happen, right? Davar Acher. Mitrotzitzim ze im ze umerivim benachlat shnei olamot. Merivim in his mitrotzitzim. Another interpretation of this word, vayidrotzitzu, which is the crucial word here. The other thing is they were fighting benachlat shnei olamot. What does that mean? Nachala is an inheritance, right? Shnei olamot, two worlds. What two worlds are we talking about? So we'll stop for a minute and we'll just summarize. The whole situation was hopeless. Or another way of saying it is, we needed Esav. Now what did we possibly need Esav for? It had to be. Esav had to be, even if the birth of Esav was miraculous, it only came through prayer. The natural way of having children did not work for Yaakov, for Yitzchak and Rivka. What was it that Esav provided us with? So let's turn the page and look at the Shem Mishmur. This long passage from the Shem Mishmur is about half of the actual passage, which I edited. But if you wanted to look at it, at the original, it's here at the bottom, right? Toldot, Tafresh Ayin Bet. That's the whole thing in the book called Shem Mishmuel, the drashot of the son of the Sefer. So listen to what he says. Ve'ele Toldot Yitzchak ben Abraham. Abraham omidit Yitzchak pasuk. Yesh lahavin kefel halashon. It's important to understand. You have to understand the Shem Mishmur knew Rashi, right? You know, he learned in a cheder and he knew Rashi Balfeh. So he's asking exactly the same question as Rashi, but that doesn't mean that he didn't know that he was asking the same question as Rashi. He knew that. So he says, Yesh lahavin kefel halashon ukvar hit oru bazeh rabbeinu zal. This question is dealt with by Chazal. V'nira dehine yesh mitbonein madua b'ra'u, I'm sorry, Yaakov ve'Esav te'omim bebeten achat. Why? He asked the question a different way. Why were they twins? And why did they have to come out of the same stomach or uterus? Right? She'al kein haya lirivka tsar gadol ma'od ad she'er amra halavai lo nit abarti. So this caused Rivka great strain and distress, so much so that she said, why am I pregnant? I mean, I was not pregnant. Now I am pregnant because we prayed and we begged and we beseeched, so I am pregnant, but what do I need the tsar? What do I need to have a son in my womb who's running around looking for idolatry? That I can't understand. She said, even though she desired sons very much, and they couldn't get there unless both of them, Yitzchak and Rivka, davened for children. Vata amra alavai lo nid tabarti. And now she says, lama ze anochi, why did I have this the pleasure of this situation? Ein ze ki im shebevadai haya tsar gadol meod ad dikducha shel nefesh, she was so unhappy that she was actually endangered. She endangered her soul. Af shenasim tzidkani, nashim tzidkaniyot lo haya bepitkata shel chava. That the nashim tzidkaniyot were not part of the chava tradition. Chava had a son, his name was Cain, who killed Hevel. So you can't say that she was like Chava, right? In other words, the Shemi Shmuel is going to say something very interesting, but he's introducing it with this idea that you might answer the question by saying, well, that's a big deal. You know, Chava had a son that turned out to be a bad guy, so maybe she is somehow related to that story about Chava, and that she also could have a bad son. She says no. He says after Nashim Tzidkan Yod Lo Yu Bepitkata Shel Chava, Avadai Lo Haya Ze Bemikre V'Derech Nashim. He says this cannot be like an accidental event. It's something that happens perhaps statistically. You know, there's a certain number of twins that are born, and with the a certain number of twins that are born, some are nice to each other, some are not nice to each other. He says, you can't say that. He says, when they're ever faresh, al pima makva kodkat show, avi admor zil slotzev salib rohom, etc., she yakal v'esav, hen kidimyon eitzachayim v'eitzadas tovarach. He says, I want to make a comparison. I want to tell you who Yaakov and Esav were. Yaakov and Esav were the incarnation of the Eitz Hadas and the Tov Vara, the Eitz Hadas Tov Vara, and the Eitz HaChayim. Right, there were these two trees. What does he mean? Eitz HaChayim, Eitz Hadas Tov Vara. Sheshnehem Yesh lehem koach ha-chibur keteva ha-emtza'i. That both of them, Yaakov and Esav, have the ability to tie things together, right, in a median way. Ela she'etz ha-chayim mechaper chelkei ha-chayim levad. Ve'etz ha-dat, tov vara mechaper tov vara. Kach Yaakov chiber Hashemayim va'aretz al yedei shehelat ha'aretz la'shamayim ve'esav hishpil et Hashemayim la'aretz. And this is what the Socha Jobah said. So now let's see if we can get a handle on it. He says Yaakov and Esav represent two forces, both of them understand that God is God and the world is the world, and everybody understands that you have to make your way in that world. But Esav, as we said earlier, was very much part of the physical world that we live in. And he thought that the physical world, which is God's creation, is the important thing, the important place to be. And therefore, Esav would be the one who would bring heaven down to earth. As though he would say to heaven, it's better down here. It's better when I just fulfill my desires and my elemental needs. I don't need heaven to take me away from all of this. Quite the contrary. Heaven should come down to me. That was Esav. Yaakov said that we can make the Gashmi of Olam Hazeh Ruchani. We can bring earth up to heaven. We can bring earth up to heaven. Now this is a departure. This is a departure from the Dor HaFlaga, the people who built the Migdal Bavel, who said we want to conquer heaven. We want to take over heaven. This was another way of doing it. Right? So then the Sukkot Shavuot says this is like what happened in Gan Eden. Because in Gan Eden there was an Eitz of Chayim and Eitz of Tova Ra. And the Eitz of Tova Ra enabled you through the choices that you made to even bring the earth up to heaven. Whereas the Eitz of Chayim represented the idea that life, that the way we live our lives, is more important than what they do in heaven. Right? So it's a kind of a metaphor. And it's a metaphor that takes us back, I mean, everything's a metaphor, it takes us back to Gan Eden. And so it's an answer to that question. The question, why do we have to know about Gan Eden? Why does the Torah just start from Adam HaRishon and Chava outside of Gan Eden, doing whatever they're doing, or giving a short reference? What do I have to know about Gan Eden? So the answer is that Gan Eden, according to the Sukkot Shavuot, Gan Eden is with us. We're all in Gan Eden. The Gan Eden of making a choice. Are we going to stay in the Gan Eden that we can produce on our own, or are we going to get out? So Yaakov and Esav represent the real together. Together they're very real, because there is an inclination that some people have to bring earth up to heaven, and other people want to bring heaven down to earth. So if you look at the continuation, it says, "V'hinei tachlit tzurat ha'adam," the form of man, v'shleimuta, hu Yaakov shu'aya ikar amechaber shnei olamot. So Yaakov is the one who is able to tie together the different worlds. V'zesha amuzal surat tam chakuka bakisei. The tam is Yaakov, of course. He's chakuka bakisei. He's engraved in the throne in heaven. The yuvan alpi devarenu anal she'im osei kol maasei olam hazeh rak l'tzorech olam haba v'lo lehanot olam hazeh v'zehu mechaber olam hazeh l'olam haba. So that if you are able, and this was Yaakov's advantage, he was an ishtam Yosef Ohalim. He knew his priorities was such that he ate because he wanted to get to heaven. And so when Rivka came to Yaakov, her son, and said, "Listen, you have to make lunch for your father. Make him good stuff." And he says, Yaakov was incredulous. He says, "What are you talking about? My father and I, right, we learn together. We don't eat lunch together. That's not what we do." So she said to him that he's about to make a mistake. He's about to confuse, according to Shem Yishmael, he's about to confuse heaven coming down to earth, with earth going up to heaven. And the only one who can save him, and that's why Yaakov agreed to lie, because it was a matter of life and death for his father. Even though Yitzchak at the end, Yitzchak is an ish tam. Yaakov is an ish tam, but Yitzchak is an olat mima, right? Yitzchak is perfect, just like Abraham was perfect. And we see that Yitzchak trying to save Esav was kind of becoming imperfect. So Yaakov agreed to do what Rivka told her to do, but not because he needed the bracha. That you could see. If you look in the parasha, there's a bracha that goes to Yaakov and a bracha that goes to Esav. They happen to be exactly the same, the two brachot. But then at the end of the parasha of Toldos, Yitzchak says to his son, okay, you're going to run away, you're going to padan aram, you're going to do it, but I want to give you the bracha of Abraham. So that the bracha of Abraham was never going to go to Esav. What Yitzchak was trying to do was to save him. He was trying to raise the Gashmiyut to a level of, through the mitzvah of Kibbud Avaim, try to raise the Gashmiyut of Esav to a different level, to make him see heaven. And so Rivka was worried about his judgment, that Yitzchak perhaps had made a mistake in terms of what he might be able to accomplish. Not in the idea. The idea was certainly a good idea, but Yitzchak, who said that Yitzchak would be able to accomplish changing Esav around? Maybe that would never happen, and so Rivka wanted to protect him from that problem. She went to Yaakov, and she says, Yaakov, you have to make him food and feed him, because your food will be food that will take him to heaven. Whereas Esav's food is the food that will bring heaven down to earth. Have a good Shabbos.